companies may look at it and say, well, we already have the salespeople. It's not actually costing us any money. I'm pretty sure that the time that those sales reps are spending on leads that are low intent is costing a significant amount of money. Not only the salaries that you're paying to those salespeople, but the lost opportunity, because instead of focusing all their time moving the needle with high intent opportunities, they're wasting a lot of time chasing opportunities that are not there. So you've really got to stop and think about it from a marketing perspective. And instead of focusing on quantity, you've got to prioritize quality over that quantity. Because quite frankly, 5 high intent buying leads are probably going to turn into a whole hell of a lot more money than 100 low intent leads.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, and this is going to be a great discussion because for me, I've already had an off-mic discussion to me that just got the wheels turning, and we're going to be talking today a lot about the issues, fallacies, pitfalls, the problems that are associated with demand generation. And we're going to be talking about 5 reasons demand generation fails in today's world and marketplace, and we're going to do that with Deanna Shimoda. Deanna, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jim.
Now, before we get into our discussion, if you could share with the B2B DM gang just a little bit of background and insights into how you've gained experience in this particular area.
Yeah, so my background is in B2B marketing. I went to college for marketing. I worked in a corporate career for many years before I ended up on the agency side. And today I'm CEO of a company called Growth Mode Marketing, which is a demand generation agency that helps B2B organizations break through the clutter of crowded markets so that they can crush their revenue targets. And so from the perspective of where I sit today, you know, I have a lot of experience leading marketing teams on the corporate side and often was charged with how do we achieve high growth as an organization. So building up marketing programs from the ground and marketing teams from scratch to help those organizations accelerate their revenue growth.
You know, okay, so I think it's also helpful because you had shared with me some of the influencers, constraints, impetus in regards to, you know, this high growth transformation planning frameworks and activities. Mm-hmm. And you had talked about funded companies. If you could explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So a lot of times, I mean, personally at Growth Mode Marketing, we end up working with organizations that tend to be private equity backed. The reason being, you know, it's in our name, Growth Mode. Those are companies that happen to be on a mission for high growth. You know, typically they're going to be funded by those investors who are expecting a return on their dollar at some point. And so those organizations have the mission to grow, you know, maybe 5x, 10x over a certain period of time. And a lot of times, the organizations that we work with, they may have 1 to 2 people on the marketing team, but they haven't built out a fully robust marketing department. And they maybe never will because added employees is a fixed cost that they might not want on the books as they're trying to go out and be acquired. So we work with them as an extension of their marketing team to help them build out that strategy and what we consider that growth engine for them so that they have the ability to start growing and to have a predictable, scalable way from a marketing perspective to continue to support the organization as it grows and contribute to that.
Okay, so now we have that venture-backed or funded type of organization. And a lot of our listeners may not be in that particular situation. Maybe they're founder led and a legacy business is helping to fund a new venture. But
sure,
looking at, you know, how do I actually grow this? Because I'm sure, you know, all founders want to have a 5-10x return, right?
Right.
would they potentially view and see things possibly a little bit differently than a venture-backed organization?
Yeah, I mean, that's very fair. And we certainly have our fair share of individuals that we talk to that are in that particular situation where they may not be ready to make this major investment in building out the marketing foundation. I think there's a way for those organizations to start to take a step back and think about it, though, because marketing is the engine that helps fuel growth and helps fuel the success of the sales team. And so it's certainly something as you're starting an organization that I think you need to think about from the very beginning. And the reason is if they don't know you exist, they're not going to buy from you, especially the way that today's B2B buyers are purchasing. They're making up to 80% of that purchase decision before they even are willing to engage with a company. So if you stop and think about that, like really think about that, they're narrowing down who they're going to talk to, and they probably have a pretty darn good idea of who they actually want to go with before they ever engage with a sales rep. So if you're not part of that discovery process for them, you've totally missed the boat. And so even if you don't have a big budget for that now, I would encourage business leaders to stop and think about how do we build a digital footprint now, you know, and that could be doing things like starting your own podcast, doing webinar series, building out your website to be able to provide people with an experience where they can get a lot of the questions answered. But again, if they don't know you exist, you're not going to drive traffic to your website. You've got to go beyond that. So how do you start to build awareness, you know? Looking at that, you're probably going to have to spend some money on it, but you can do things like be a podcast guest where they'll share your link. You can tap into their audiences. And I think looking for those opportunities where you can contribute to articles and podcasts and different events where other people, organizations, industry groups have established audiences that are very relevant to your organization and who you're trying to sell to. How do you tap into that to start to build that out?
Well, I mean, as you're talking, I start thinking about the opportunities, and they're absolutely immense. You have to almost have to map all these things out and go through, you know, some type of what I refer to as a decision matrix to be able to say, okay, we only have so much bandwidth. You only have so much, you know, to invest. We only have so much, and so what can we do? So that's one issue. And then the other issue is when you start talking about complex environments that we are in, and the complexities continue to grow, and we also have most organizations which aren't sitting there with a lot of, you know, innovative and research capacity, and so they're busy doing work and trying to get it all.
Right.
I mean, you know, the studies will say, well, 80% of them made a decision before they actually reached out to anybody. But are they, really? I mean, if we start thinking about the 95% of the market, how many of them are really at the point to where they even know how to, or what they need to solve the problem?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you take a step back and look at the research that has come out of Gartner in the last year, you know, and that's where the 80% up to, you know, the decision process, that statistic has come from. It's taking an average of 66 touches before someone is willing to engage on a B2B level with a sales rep or a company. And 72% of B2B buyers are saying that they would prefer to have zero interaction with a sales rep through any of the purchase process. So the reality is, you know, and we're seeing this with our clients and with the companies we're going out and talking to, their sales leaders and their marketing leaders and their CEOs are saying the things that we have done in the past are not working anymore and people are not responding to them and it's getting really hard to do it. So I think, you know, yes, 95%, and in a bad economy where companies are pulling back their spend, it's probably more realistic that it's 99% are not in market to buy now. They're probably not going out and seeking solutions.
Well,
go ahead.
No, it's good.
I was going to say, but the reality is, like, you can get content in front of them where you're not seeking to sell to them. You're just seeking to provide like valuable content to people. And you're building out this audience so that they continually engage with your content. And you're telling a story, you know, if you've built out a demand generation engine the way we would at Growth Mode Marketing, you've identified like, who is my ideal customer profile? And those are the type of companies that you want to attract. And it's getting very hyper-focused. So it doesn't mean I'm only selling to companies in this particular narrow window, but it means all of my marketing that I'm putting out there, I'm building it out to attract this audience. So you define your ideal customer profile. Then you go and you map out your unique point of view. We do a unique point of view story framework that really helps tell the story, and it's very hyper-focused on that ideal customer profile. And then you go and you start building out this content, and you look at what type of content you're building. You create what we call cornerstone content, which are those bigger piece, meatier pieces, and then you chip off cobblestones. So you're basically slicing and dicing the content to make it go further. And you're looking at creating content for each stage of the funnel. So 95%, maybe 99% are at that awareness, but you've also got content for the consideration phase. You've also got content for the decision phase. And then you're going out and you're distributing it. So that's how do you get that content in front of people? So you're showing up with the content and telling the story over and over and over in the places where these ideal customer profile companies are showing up. So you're feeding this content and getting it in front of them and teaching them about the challenges. And as you're telling this unique point of view story over and over and over, if you're getting it out there in front of them and in the right places, some of them are going to read it and they might be like, I don't agree. And you actually want that, because if you're saying something that every person agrees with, it's not a unique point of view. You're not standing out in the market. You're saying the same thing as everybody else. But if you're saying something that challenges thinking, some people, some buyers will be like, that doesn't resonate with me. But you're going to have another group that's going to be like, what they're saying makes sense. And I like this story, and this has really got me thinking. So I'm going to continue to listen to this story, you know, and that's where it's about building out that audience where they're continually consuming the content you put out there. Podcasts are a great example of how that works in action. If you've got an audience that likes the conversations that you're having on your podcast and it resonates for them and it helps them walk away and think about how to apply the things they're hearing in the conversations of that podcast, they're probably going to come back and continue to listen. And eventually they're going to be like, hey, Jim, you know what? The things you've been talking about really resonate with us. We do have this problem, and I've never thought about it in that context before, but I'm starting to realize where we're having problems here, because everything you're saying hits home to me.
You know, as you're talking, so for me, we have several communities at peerroundtables.com where, we have, you know, open member-driven discussions and get down into specifics in certain areas in regards to sales, marketing, revenue generation. And one of the things that I find most perplexing is that if you look at the themes over the past couple years, it pretty much falls within to 7 or 8 major categories or topics in regards to, hey, we only have the pre-COVID relationships that we have that we're working. And they start going into, you know, difficulty with conversions, difficulties with top of funnel, difficulty with bottom funnel, all of these types of things. But then when we start talking about innovation, transformation, doing things different, it's like crickets.
Yeah.
So how do you get an organization, you know, to say, all right, at what point, you know, do you stop banging your head?
Mm-hmm. Well, right. I mean, the definition of insanity, according to Albert Einstein, is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, right? And what we have seen organizations do from a marketing perspective, you know, and this is probably one of those mistakes not to do with demand generation, is, okay, we need leads, we need them now, and focusing on the short game and only the short game. So they're starting to do activities in hopes that it'll bring more leads in. And a perfect example of that is, you know what, digital ads, we can get leads from this. Let's double down and put all our eggs in this basket to drive leads in with digital advertising. Well, it's going to depend on the approach that you do with digital advertising, whether that's going to work or not. A lot of times, throwing more money into digital advertising doesn't produce the results that a company is looking for. And part of that reason is, you know, what is the offer? If you're suddenly running a ton of ads to view our demo, viewing a demo is a very high buying intent activity. I'm pretty unlikely to go see your demo unless I genuinely am ready to look at this and buy. So you're putting it out there thinking, we're going to attract more people to do this. But if there's not a lot of demand in the market right now, they don't know who you are, you're not necessarily going to get more leads because you're asking them to marry you on the first date. And that doesn't happen very often, right? And quite frankly, from a digital advertising perspective, like a lot of attribution software will indicate this lead came in through digital advertising. So it looks like this is where our leads come from. We need to invest more in this. But if you pull away from doing the other activities, the reality is, if you have a complex enterprise software that you're selling that's quite expensive, they did a whole heck of a lot more behind the scenes than just click on your digital ad. Because again, remember, it takes 66 touches on average. Some may be 30 touches. Some may be 200 touches. This is the average, and it's a pretty high average. So they're going to your webinars, they're listening to your podcast, they're talking to people in the market, they're watching what your team's posting on LinkedIn, you know, they're reading your blogs, they're getting your emails. Like, there's a lot of twists and turns in that buyer journey and how they're getting their information. And you may not have visibility into everything that they're doing, but I guarantee you, if you stop doing all those other things, you're going to see a dip in the leads that come in from your digital ads. And you need to take a step back and look at, you know, the leads that do come in from digital ads. How are they closing compared to things you attribute back to other stuff? You know, it's sometimes the numbers aren't as transparent as you think they are.
Well, and I think to me, what I hear you saying too, is that, you know, part of the interpretation abilities and skills within that data, you know, if you're coming at it with a limited, you know, view or scope or lens, you're going to interpret, you know, and have a false interpretation, essentially. But I will also say, mm-hmm. we probably just lost our LinkedIn sponsorship because you're dinging ads.
No, you know, I think ads absolutely do play a place in the marketing mix. But there are different ways to use the ads and make them work. And you have to look at it from an omni-channel approach, and you have to be realistic about what you're using the ads for. Everybody wants leads. I mean, that's why we do all of this stuff. But sometimes you have to look at the ads and say, okay, we're using this to help build brand awareness in conjunction with all these things. So rather than putting it out there and saying, here, click on this, we'll show you a demo. Like, what if you try different approaches and test out different ways to use the digital advertising to drive people through the funnel? So what if you're giving away really good content for free?
You're actually suggesting split testing? I ain't got time for that. I need leads.
Well, and the struggle is real. And I think that brings us to mistake number two at demand generation, and that's reactive marketing. We call this random acts of marketing. It is one of the biggest killers of growth when it comes to building marketing programs for your company. And the reason is, you know, we've all been in those organizations. I certainly have when I've been on the corporate side, where it's like the sales team comes to you panicked. We need leads. We need them now. We're not going to hit our numbers this month, this quarter, this year. And we need help. What happens is marketing stops focusing on the long-term strategy to build out growth so that they can help fight the fire instead of preventing the fire. And I think what happens there is suddenly, you know, you're doing these very reactive ad hoc things that quite frankly add up to a lot of ineffective results because you're not prioritizing the work to focus on the activities that will be most impactful for the organization. And this happens at every marketing organization, you know, especially in the B2B space, because you've got a lot of people coming at you who want your help. Sales, they're very guilty of this, you know, individual sales reps even, who will come and be like, you know what, if you could just create these three slides for me, this will help me move this $500,000 deal that I've been working on for 18 months. Well, we want to be team players as marketers, right? So we're like, okay, if that helps you move the deal, I will do that. Then you've got the CEO coming to you and he's like, hey, I had a great idea for a webinar. Let's do it. Well, he's the CEO, you know, it's hard to say no to them. You assume that they're always looking at this with the right lens. But remember, none of these people are marketers. They're coming to you with ideas. And as a marketing leader, you've got to remain focused and you've got to be able to say no from time to time and really take a step back and evaluate, are the requests that are coming in actually going to move the needle and support the mission at hand, which is high growth, or are we just being reactive right now? And if you're just being reactive and you don't feel confident that this is supporting the strategy, you've got to say no.
Well, okay. So wait a minute. Okay. So I think there's a lot of fear associated with that because what the latest statistic, average CMO tenure is like 18 months. I can't say no. Mm-hmm. No, I go, you know, I'm going to get kicked out of
here. Right. Well, and why do you think the average tenure is 18 months? Because you're not getting results. And I get it. It's a hard position to be in, you know, as marketers, sometimes you get hired and the organization is like, the answer to all our problems is here. We are now going to achieve high growth because we hired a really experienced marketer that has done this before. And I've seen some really, really good marketers who lost their jobs because the organization wasn't able to achieve the growth that they wanted. Well, you know, in hindsight, if you were one of those leaders that fell victim to that problem, stop and think about it. Like, did you have the ability and the support to build out a demand generation engine up front and to focus on the long-term growth for the company? Or were you focused on very reactive marketing because that's how everything around you was working? And I think that brings us to, you know, number three on one of the things that fails at demand generation, and that is playing only the short game. It's really common, I think, for organizations to be focused on the short game because the short game is bringing in leads to move the needle in the immediate term. That absolutely is an important thing to do in an organization. But what happens is you're focused on the 5% of companies that are in market now, and you're completely ignoring the 95% that are not in market. Well, guess what? Those 95% of companies are going to be important to you in the future. And if you don't start working on building that brand awareness and that trust now, well, if they've made 80% of that purchase decision before they even engage with a company, you're not going to make the consideration set. And so you've kind of got to take a step back and look at it and say, okay, if marketing's goal is to focus on the long-term growth, because building out a demand generation engine is not the silver bullet that starts producing results on day one. It takes a while to build out that engine. And then you've got to continually feed it with, you know, fuel it with content and really good content and get it out there because you're building up an audience that follows you. So realistically, it's going to take 6 to 9 to 12 months of doing a really good job with demand generation to start to see a predictable level of inbound leads come in. A lot of organizations don't have the patience, and lack of patience is a growth killer, because if you're not willing to play the long game, what's going to happen is you're going to have to play the short game always, because you're constantly chasing your tail because the demand has not been created in the market for your company's services. You're always going to be behind on the revenue numbers, and you can't seem to get off that merry-go-round because you're always being very reactive.
The proverbial catch-22 situation. Now, you keep mentioning about 5% in market. I've seen some studies say as little as 1%. So when you start, you know, talking about the ICP, start talking about all of those, you know, solutions and niching down and all of that stuff. I mean, so really, we couldn't even take 5% as some type of generalization across all different or all organizations. Sometimes it's much smaller.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. So I have seen studies from like Harvard Review that said 95%. So that's where I get that number from. I have seen a lot of people reference that 97% earn in market. And I recently read an article that did say if the normal year is 95%, in a year when the economy is tough, and you know, if you work in the tech space, you've seen this, a lot of companies are pulling back on spend in anticipation of potential down sales and challenges, which means they're not spending as much money, which means now it's more likely that 1% are actually in market to buy. And I'm sure that it depends on what you sell, what industry you're in, all those kind of things, on how small that number really is. But I think the net takeaway from this is, hey, most companies that you're trying to sell to aren't actually in market to sell or to buy. And you can't convince someone who is not there and ready to buy now. Not if you're selling something that costs any amount of money that could be considered significant. You know, if you're going and you're selling $500 widgets, that's a different story. If you're going and you're selling $1 million enterprise software, obviously, you're not going to convince someone, no matter how compelling you feel the story is. That doesn't mean they won't get there someday, but you're not going to sell them right now, because you've got to spend the time and make the investment to really build out that story and to get them to engage and follow along so that they can get there.
Also talking about, you know, the research and all of that, even if you start referring to that whole buyer journey component, we start talking about, you know, in market, we start, you know, referring to all of that, there's still a situation where now in today's world, most deals are lost to no decision. It's like 60% or more. And so not only do we have to do all of these pieces in regards to, hey, this is your problem, this is how it gets fixed, you have a problem to solve, this can help you to do that. But now we also have to address the whole issue of, hey, you're making the right decision. This is the path to take. It is a secure decision to make so that it doesn't render a no decision.
Right. You know, and if they're making no decision, you know, what I would challenge there is, were they actually in market to buy? You know, or were you trying to pull them into your sales process and convince them, here's why you buy? Because if someone's truly in market, they know they have the problem, they want to make the change, they're ready to make the change, right? Everyone else, like when you have tire kickers, you're not fully committed to making that purchase if you're a tire kicker. And some people are just too nice to say no to the sales rep, so they go through the whole process. There's a lot of wasted time and ultimately money spent on chasing low intent leads. And we see this all the time with companies, you know, where marketing may be handing over leads, and this is mistake number four with demand generation. You're handing over leads that are not high intent, and you're focusing on quantity. And I think the reason this can happen is, as marketers, we in a lot of organizations have had goals put on us that are specific around the number of leads that we pass to sales. Well, guess what happens in those instances? The marketing team starts to focus on every way that they can capture a name to be able to hand it over to sales. And it lacks quality, not because the marketing team doesn't care about quality, but because they're being held to account on, we need more leads. And they're hearing from the sales team, we need more leads. And in some cases, the sales team is even like, just give us names. If I just have a name, I have somebody to chase. Those days of that strategy working are long gone. People are doing everything they can to avoid talking to a sales rep. So if you're just cold calling them, I mean, all of your listeners, put yourself in your shoes. How often do you respond to a cold email? How often do you pick up the phone and have an actual conversation with someone that just randomly calls you out of the blue to tell you about the problems you have and how they can solve them? Right? Like, we're all hitting ignore on those phone calls when we don't recognize that phone number. So, you know, companies may look at it and say, well, we already have the salespeople. It's not actually costing us any money. I'm pretty sure that the time that those sales reps are spending on leads that are low intent is costing a significant amount of money. Not only the salaries that you're paying to those salespeople, but the lost opportunity, because instead of focusing all their time moving the needle with high intent opportunities, they're wasting a lot of time chasing opportunities that are not there. So you've really got to stop and think about it from a marketing perspective. And instead of focusing on quantity, you've got to prioritize quality over that quantity. Because quite frankly, 5 high intent buying leads are probably going to turn into a whole hell of a lot more money than 100 low intent leads.
So the qualification process, I mean, you have to make sure that good framework for that, and it's consistently being applied, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that's, and we'll recap these once we get through them, but I think you were at number 4, so are we at number 5?
Yep, number 5. So the last thing I would leave everyone with that I think is a mistake with demand generation is trying to be everything to everyone. So, you know, I've talked to numerous companies and marketers where you go in and you're like, who is your ideal customer profile? And the feedback is, well, we can work with this company, we can work with this company, we can work with this industry. We actually can work with everybody. I will use HR technology as an example because we do a lot of work in that space. It's a very crowded market. And the trying to be everything to everybody does not work, because if, let's say, I'm a manufacturing company and there are 50 human capital management platform companies marketing to me, and they all, in my eyes, essentially do the same thing, it gets overwhelming. And I start to look at it as, oh, I'm going to pick a few, maybe the big names that I've heard of before. I'm probably going to price shop because I think they're all the same. Now imagine if one of those human capital management platform companies specialized in manufacturing and to talk about that are very relevant to me, to demonstrate that they understand the complexities of having a workforce that are in the manufacturing industry, you know, the high turnover rates, the shift differentials, all of those pieces that are going to be very relevant to me as a HR leader in manufacturing. Well, if I'm getting 50 messages and only one of them speaks my language, guess which one I'm going to gravitate towards? And so I think a lot of organizations have a fear of skinnying down their audience, because the old adage, you know, the more hooks you have in the water, the more fish you're going to catch. well, if I went from I can go after 100,000 companies to, whoa, I can only go after 20,000 companies now, that's scary because suddenly I don't have as many opportunities to go out there.
So the other saying to that is the riches are in the niches.
Right, right. Yep. And I've heard people say that a lot lately. And I think the ideal customer profile becomes so much more than just I'm picking an industry and this is who I'm doing. But that's the starting point for it is, you know, getting hyper focused with your ideal customer profile and then getting hyper focused with your unique point of view story framework and then all of the content and all of the distribution you do. Again, is hyper-focused on that audience because the content you put out there is going to dictate the audience that you attract.
Most definitely. Okay, so let's just do, if you could, let's recap these five reasons demand generation fails. If you could just go through that list at as far as...
That assumes that I actually had it written down and was going through it. So let's see if my memory serves me well. The first one was, I have no idea. I'm going to say reactive marketing. I know we talked about reactive marketing in there. And that is the mistake of dropping everything to do random acts of marketing.
Yeah.
Oh, Jim. It's a Friday. I don't have them all written down. I was jumping all over the place and going with the conversation.
No, I mean, you did great. So here's what we'll do. For me, the reality is there's a lot more than five that we could probably continue to
totally
into. But ultimately what we're referring to is changing the way we used to do things. And the conversation I had the other day was, when we think about the concept of, for example, the Rolodex, I say the Rolodex is dead. Well, it is, it's in its traditional sense, meaning that we have capabilities at our disposal, innovative opportunities at our disposal that will actually take the concept of the Rolodex, meaning that, hey, I know these people, I met these people, you know, there's some type of connection with these people, and digitizing it. So let's digitize the Rolodex thinking and look at it from a different lens. Now I have things available to us that just weren't available before, but the only problem with that is it's available to everyone else as well. So as you said, if I'm infantile in my thinking, I'm just going to go to ads and I'm going to create ads, and then I'm going to try to ask people to get naked by going to a demo, right?
Yeah.
That's minimalistic, inexperienced, naive type of decision making. And I also had this conversation, and I would love to get your insights on this. Is I was chatting with somebody, and it was a founder led organization, and they were talking about, well, they want to hire a marketing person, and I'm like, I said that used to work, but when you start looking at the different disciplines. And the expertise required, we've identified that there are seven unique disciplines in order to have, you know, essentially a multimodal, multiple impact, you know, type of, you know, marketing activity. And I'm sure this is why a lot of people will come to your organization for help. But that seven disciplines was just in, hey, we're going to do a web presence. I'm like, well, we have SEO, we have technical SEO, we have, you know, copy, we have content,
right?
We have repurposing, we have all, I'm like, there's no longer a scenario or a situation where you can hire the marketing person. Those days.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, everyone wants that unicorn that can do everything, but there are so many disciplines and expertise levels and avenues within marketing that it's virtually impossible to find someone that can do all of the things. And I think a lot of times when an organization is hiring their first marketing person, that's what they're looking for, is somebody that can do all the things. Well, usually, you know, even just taking the basic marketing pieces, you're not going to have someone that can do design really well, copywriting really well, SEO really well, you know, all the pieces, and be able to go and execute them. So if you're looking at making a marketing hire, what you want to do is evaluate, do I need someone tactical right now or do I need someone strategic? And if you need someone who's tactical, you're going to have to prioritize which activities you need them to be able to do, because they're not going to be able to do everything, to your point, Jim. That just doesn't exist. There's too many things in marketing and you need expertise in it. A lot of times what we'll see is an organization, they may even start with like a fractional CMO who will come in and help think through high level strategy. And then they will hire Growth Mode Marketing or another agency to come in and help supplement the strategy piece of it and to do the tactical work to execute. Because you can either go spend, you know, $150,000 on a marketing person to try to get them to do everything, which they're not going to have the ability to do, or you can bring in a marketing team where they're going to be able to do the different disciplines for you so that you can actually move the needle a little bit further.
And what I've seen a lot is here's a breakdown, or talking about a pitfall, which is quite significant, is because people don't understand the complexities that you just referred to from a strategic perspective, and then therefore applying the tactical, they think they know, and then therefore they just go and hire somebody to do the tactical, and therefore there's really no strategy, you know, behind the decision that they made. I often talk about jokingly something called the Holiday Inn Express syndrome. Oh yeah, I can do marketing. I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. And then those are also the same people that say, well, we need to hire a marketing person. I'm like, there's no strategy here. You're not working across marketing, sales, customer success, or client success. I mean, there's no uniformity and way by which we can actually present value and differentiation, that we can really understand the riches being in our niches. And I'm like, there's a whole lot of pieces missing here. So if you start talking about, and we have thrown out a lot of statistics, you know, 99% out of market, 1% in market, 95.5%, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
If I start thinking about organizations that kind of fall into the camp of, hey, they're getting this right, the high growth potential is, you know, going to, you know, has the capability of being realized. What are we looking at is from a marketplace perspective?
Yeah, I think the organizations that are doing it well really understand the whole, you know, like we've got to play the long game, which means we can't just focus on the small percentage of companies that are in market today. And they build out that digital footprint. And so they're not just building a really good website where people can come and they can go deep and get all their questions answered from a sales perspective. They're also building out their managed channels so that they're building an audience that starts to follow and consume their content and really likes the story that they're telling, so that they're ultimately building an affinity for your brand and your products and services. And they'll tap you on the shoulder when they are in market to buy. It's also building out that third avenue, which is the third party channels. So how do we get our content and our name out there into other organizations, other resources, other people's existing built out audiences that are relevant to who we're trying to target? And I think if you do those three things and you build out a really strong digital footprint, you're setting yourself up for success, knowing how today's buyers buy. I mean, it accelerated during COVID and has continued to be the case, where people are engaging less and less directly with a company and more with what they can find online and dark social channels and, you know, doing their own research because they want to be in control of their buying process instead of pulled into a company's sales process.
Well, you know, you just hit on yet another sore spot when you start talking about partners and channels. Huge wave of organizations wanting to have partners and channels and have that to be a successful way of them, you know, to obtain their growth numbers. And I'm like, you have no strategy, no clue. If you think that, again, it's kind of like the product-led, egotistical, you know, mindset to say, oh, well, our stuff is great. Of course they're going to sell it.
Yeah.
your best interest is not theirs. How do you actually put together a program by which you're actually going to achieve some success with it? Because that's a whole different avenue when you start looking at the fail rate. 99% mm-hmm. partner channels and relationships do not produce anything. In fact, they're drains on your organization. So that's
the
discussion that we can
Yeah.
Deanna, the great conversation, great insight. I look forward to continuing this. But for now, if you could, please share with the B2B DM gang how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, if you're interested in learning more about growth mode marketing and demand generation in general, check out our podcast, The Demand Gen Fix. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Follow me, Deanna Shimoda, on LinkedIn. I often put out insights and thoughts around demand generation and what works and what doesn't. And then, of course, you can check out our website as well, which is growthmodemarketing.com.
Deanna Shimoda, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.